Hello and welcome to the In the Money Players Podcast. This is a Keeneland special. We're going to be doing daily coverage of Keeneland this year. Super excited about it. On this show for opening day Friday, we will be focusing on the all-turf pick three. Of course, we'll talk about the grade one as well. Peter Thomas Fornital back with you. Actually, not back with you. I think podcast-wise, I think I'm with you for the first time from this place actually resembles a bunker, and we're in Lexington, but the Lexington bunker is too obvious based on a cheeky comment Chappie made on our Santa Anita live stream. We'll call it the safe house from Lexington, a historic downtown area where I'm thrilled to be here for opening day and happy to bring with me a man who makes the morning line for Keeneland and one of his favorite tracks and a place that had a lot of success in the contest world back when he was allowed to play in such things. Contest isn't this weekend here. Next weekend, for those who are interested, reach out to Jim Goodman. Look for more info at Keeneland.com or, hell, reach out to me. I'll put you in touch. Going to be great fun contest weekend. I'll be back in New York by then, but thrilled to be here as we lift the curtain, and we will lift the curtain on these Keeneland shows by bringing in Nick Tamaro. Nick, how are things?
I'm doing great, Pete. You mentioned my past success in contests, right? I'm a has-been.
Well, you're just not allowed anymore. You're not allowed anymore. You might
probably save me money.
You were stuck on that 9 NHC qualifications, and surely it would have been 10 last year if you'd played at Keeneland. But no, you're making an honest. You're doing an honest day's work now, making the morning line.
Yeah, something like that. I guess it's a job that you can't deny having, but you certainly don't want to let people know that you do. So it's funny. And I mean, I've gotten some feedback on lines, and you know, I'm somebody I think who's obviously tried to behave myself and treat people the right way in the game and conduct myself with dignity and respect. So it's always funny when I see comments like, did the morning line maker have a brain aneurysm? And you know, this guy's got it. These are the worst lines I've ever seen. And
oh my God.
So on and so forth. And it's like, oh man, I mean, could you imagine just making your life about identifying bad morning lines and going running to Twitter to share it with everybody? I can't imagine being that vapid, but I suppose some people are.
Let me ask you this. Do you, if someone is constructive in their criticism, is it, to be honest, is it still annoying, or do you welcome that type of feedback?
No, I honestly welcome all of the feedback, right? I'm fine with it being good, bad, or indifferent. It's, you know, what my preference would be is, look, I'm not saying that I'm popular. I'm not saying that I'm well known, but the majority of social media knows that I make the morning line at Keeneland. So if you're going to make a comment about it, hit the @ntam1215.
Yeah.
Right. Don't make me search for it. Don't make somebody repost it or quote it or anything like that. Right. Don't subtweet me. Right. If you're going to, like Uncle Junior told Tony, if you're going to come in heavy or not at all. Right. Like you let me know right away and I will happily engage. So, you know, Tuesday or Wednesday, I made the first lines on Monday. So one of those afternoons, somebody who had made comments about lines in the past said, you know, made a comment and basically said that if you did what I did, then you're not qualified. And so I responded to that person and said, you know, here was my thought process and it had to do with the Ashland. And we interacted, we exchanged a couple of different tweets. And at the end of it, he was like, look, thanks so much. I really appreciate you kind of laying out what your thought process was on. And I was like, hey, I am one of the people that will enjoy talking about horses more than anybody. Like, I want to talk horses with whomever I have. Every group text I have in my phone is about horse racing. Right? I mean, it is all, you know, I'm perfectly happy to talk about it. And if you have something that you think I got wrong, then, you know, don't say, oh, that had to be a misprint or that had to be a typo, tag me and say, why the hell did you make that horse 4-5?
Yeah.
Right. And I'll happily engage with you. I have no problem with that at all. So, you know, a lot of this gets done behind the shadows and a lot of interaction doesn't take place with the people actually making these lines. And a lot of people make comments about them that don't really know a lot about what goes into making a line. They don't know a lot about the math that goes into it. They don't know a lot about, and this is not the case at Keeneland, but they don't know a lot about the restrictions at times that go into making a line. Like, I will let it be known, and I'll certainly peel the curtain back on it for some people. When I made the Breeders' Cup morning line, I was strongly discouraged from making anybody less than even money, and I was simply told quite clearly, I could not make anybody bigger than 30-1.
Right.
So, you know, when you have those constraints, and I get it, they don't want some of their horsemen to feel like they're, you know, without chance. And I understand, right? And ultimately, I was an employee at that point in time, so I had to do what I was told. So it's important, without me going on a tangent, to understand all of those things. And if you want to talk about it, certainly tag me, have a conversation with me. Happy to do it.
A lot to unpack, not least is we need to get a Sopranos group text going in your phone. We got to get a little bit of balance for the horse
racing. It's so funny that you were watching Whitecaps the other night, the same night I watched it.
That is an amazingly strange coincidence. Are you doing a full rewatch, or are you at the point now where you just pick select episodes?
So I do what you and I talked about once before, which is I'll go back to an episode and then start watching there. So this time around, right, I went back to and I've done this. This is probably the fifth or sixth time I've done it. I went back to The Happy Wanderer and started from there.
Gotcha.
So The Happy Wanderer is my favorite season two episode. I've also gone to Commendatory and started there, which is a little bit before The Happy Wanderer. The second season of that show is so good, and for my money is the best season of any of them, that I often find myself gravitating towards that season and then just going forward from there. So I am actually in episode one of season five now, which is where Feach LaManna and Tony Blundetto are introduced to the show. And so, yeah, I know what's coming, but it's still exciting.
I'm rolling through. That's a great season because it's a bit of a reboot, right? Because you've got, I can picture how excited they must have gotten in the writer's room. And we are really going on tangents today for a show that I told you was going to be 10 minutes long. I guess not. I guess we'll go a little over on this one. But, you know, not that they were written into a corner, but just that idea of the writers coming up with this idea of all these guys getting out of prison that gave them this opportunity, not just to have all these other toys to play with, but the amazing actors they're able to bring in. I mean, it's a one after the other in this season, and it's been very, very fun. Loggia in particular, I think, is just, he's having an absolute blast muttering in Italian and just being a nut. Anyway, we'll save more Sopranos chat for another day. We're here to talk about this Keeneland All-Turf Pick 3 with a little bonus coverage on opening day. We'll kick off in race number 5, where the bet starts with these 3-year-old fillies, maiden special weights, going 1 3/16. My general thought on the race, Nick, was I might try to make this what you might call a cluster of long shots race, trying to reach out at a few different runners at a price. Not that the favorites don't have chances, they do, but it just looked very competitive to me, and I thought maybe, just maybe, we could pull in a price. How are you going to pick it?
Yeah, you know, I felt similarly. I thought there were a couple of things that you wanted to at least recognize with the horses that are going to get bet. Starting with Spinning Class, who is likely to be the favorite when all is said and done. And one of the notes I had in my notebook from my morning line making from last year was that I needed to be very careful with Shug McGahee trainees in general, because they take a lot of money at Keeneland. And so I did that and made him a very soft 7-2 favorite. The other thing that I did here that I suppose some people are gonna look at the line and wonder is Priscilla's Cove had a pretty clear amount of trouble last time out at 10-1 for Riley Mott. Riley Mott's a trainer who actually took some money on a couple of occasions last year as well. And so I made her 4-1. She did run into a huge amount of traffic last time out, and now gets Joel Rosario breaking from the outside, which is really no big deal. There's a quarter mile run to the finish line and about 5/16 to the first turn. So I would pick Priscilla's Cove on top and probably use her. I do think the Elder Mott, who also has a horse with Cove in the name, Swan's Cove, one door to the inside. I actually like this horse's debut quite a bit. She's a daughter of Coco Beach, who we saw run tremendously well on these shores after relocating for Godolphin. So I could see Swan's Cove really overperforming. And the other interesting thing to me, Pete, was that one of the better running lines from any horse in this field is actually the Del Mar debut for Everything Bugs Me, which is the perfect name for a curmudgeonly horse player. And, you know, this horse ran extremely well, finishing second to Golden Ghost, who turned out to be a really productive 2-year-old. Gets Lasix now, first time for Pavel Mateshka. Luan Machado is coming off a meet-winning run at Turfway and is really, in my experience, has been at his best on the front end. This horse is going to be loose. So I think this horse actually could be a little bit dangerous to try and wire this field. So I'm going to mainly concentrate on 7, 11, and 12, and I could see myself using a little bit of the 2 as a backup.
how would you rank those runners in the order that you spoke about them, or the order you just recapped it there?
Yeah, I would go 12, 11, 7, using them equally and back up with the two.
Gotcha. We have some commonality and some differences. I did think Swan's Cove was the right one. My angle there was that five runners have come back from that last race and all improved figures, suggesting maybe that number is a little bit low. And also the idea that non-bet Mots don't usually win first out. When they get bet, they win. So I mean, this is not a wild phenomenon. It's true of most trainers. The idea, obviously, that the ones that are bet typically run better, that's just obvious. But it was particularly stark when I ran the numbers fairly recently about how much, how the non-bet ones don't do that well and then improve second out. So don't love the post. You make a good point, though. There is a quarter of a mile run there. And it might even improve the price a little bit. So I do really like Swan's Cove as a top pick. I wanted to talk a little bit about Talonade, the 10. Thought this horse would be a price. It made some sense. Thought maybe the part of the case is needing the seasonal debut. And I thought was a bit against the flow there as opposed to spinning class. And I like the fact that Johnny V kept the faith. And then the other one I was going to mention was more of a pedigree pick than anything else. The 5, Psy B. I like this cross for turf with English Channel and Belong to Me, of course, is by Danzig. 5 siblings, one on the turf. And interestingly, the siblings, other than this one, 0-for-5 on synth. So maybe, you know, usually synth and turf is kind of the same, but maybe this is one who could just be better on turf. Took a lot of money last time, indicating maybe there's a bit more talent than what that bear running line suggests. 11, 10, and 5, the main ones for me. I'll take an extra look at some of the others you mentioned, 12, 11, 7, with a little bit of the 2. Let's move on to, you know what, let's very quickly talk about the Lafayette, just because it is stakes action. It's Keeneland opening day. My opinion was super boring in this spot. I'll throw out that as I read through the race, I know the paces have been slow for Doncho, but the way that Doncho's finished up, I thought there might be a little bit more under the hood here, and that Doncho might just be able to blitz them despite the presence of other speed in the form and some potentially good speed in the form of Booth. But I was just going to be a bit master of the obvious there and go for the second choice, Doncho, and try to split Doncho and Booth as a way to maybe pick up a little equity in a bet like the pick 5. What did you make of the Lafayette?
Yeah, you look, I think a lot of Doncho's chances are going to boil down to whether Scatify goes here or runs on Saturday in the allowance race. I've not looked to see if any word has come out on that ironclad in terms of where they're going to go. I guess we'll basically find out tomorrow. You know, my worry with Doncho is that I felt like in general, some of those fairgrounds dirt sprints are probably not as high a caliber. The other thing is this horse comes off of Lasix, which I don't love, but I also
don't
want
that either. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't want to make a bigger deal of that than it is. And I was chastised by a person that I talk racing a lot the other day with, "You're way too worried about that. You're worrying about that way too much." And
from so that impression, I wonder who that could possibly be.
Probably. You could probably guess, or I'll give you 3 guesses and your first 2 don't count. So, but you know, so I mean, Michelle Lovell's numbers are actually fine. She's 5-for-39 coming off. I'm sorry. That was actually first time Lasix. I meant to put switching off of Lasix. So switching off of Lasix on dirt, she's 2-for-4, right? So, I mean, she's had no problem with it. She won it with Damon's Mound at Gallant, and then the Gallant Bob doing so. So it's probably not a big deal. I think Michelle Lovell is a really underrated trainer. I did think Booth probably made out great at the post position draw in that he can just sit right outside and kind of go on with it if he inherits things from Doncho. So I'd probably just use both of them, and I think I'm safe in assuming that one of the 2 of them is going to win.
I thought I heard, not from a particularly authoritative source, that Scatify was not going to go here, which did factor a little bit into my analysis. But you're right. They could absolutely turn up here. Would that change your reckoning of the race, or would you still stick with it 5-3?
No, quite honestly, it would probably just make me a little bit more confident because I think a slightly slower pace probably helps both of them. So, yeah, I'd probably just roll with the 3 and 5 in general. I might actually end up being more of a pick 4 player on this card because I really don't love this race. But, yeah, I would still stick with them.
All right. Gosh, it's Keeneland opening day. Let's talk about the 7th really quickly. Since we both looked at it, the nine, Amor Fati. This is another one where the form of the race I thought was interesting, just with five of the six from the last time running back with improved figures, a couple of winners. And I thought just had that opportunity to be loose. I thought that, you know, the 10 Roswell was an obvious alternative, two good runs, and that Launch, who beat her last time, came back to win a stake, was going to try to keep it super simple and chalky in this three-year-old filly allowance and go 9-10.
Yeah, you know, no real argument from me. I mean, the only other horse that kind of drew my interest at all was Sam's Treasure for Wesley Ward, who's going to have to improve, but now is a newly turned three-year-old who ran some races as a two-year-old that speed figure-wise probably put her in range. And, you know, I'm always sort of inclined to take a good long look at any of Wesley's horses running at Keeneland in general. So, I kind of felt similarly. You know, I don't know exactly what to make of Amor Fati, because they had Amor Fati entered a couple of times at Gulfstream and she didn't go. And I don't know if maybe the trainer switches were happening at that point or what exactly was going on, but she was a very impressive debut winner. And I mean, word was out because that was a 10 horse field. There were some really nice looking horses on paper that she took money right in the face of. So, you know, we could be on the verge of finding out that Amor Fati is potentially a really seriously talented horse. So I don't want to completely overlook her chances. And I felt like Roswell was probably a safe insurance policy given how well she ran in those two starts at Gulfstream. Timeform US wise, there's a big disparity between Timeform US and Bayer on Roswell's first two races, where Timeform US has them much, much faster than the Bayer figs do. The Bayer figs have them a little bit faster than Timeform US does. So, and Gulfstream's a tough place to make figures with the really sparse amount of dirt racing. So it's something worth keeping an eye on now as we move forward.
Yeah, that's the kind of thing you can make a note as to sort of which number seems correct and that could help you evaluate others coming out of those races. I wrote it down 4, 9, and 10. That sound about right?
That's about right.
All right. Race number 8. This is one of the features, the secondary feature traditionally on the opening day, the Grade 3 Transylvania Stakes. I can throw a rock, Nick, from where I'm sitting here to Transylvania University, actually, right by it. Mile and a 16th on the turf, the second leg in this pick three, all turf pick three, bet that we're both big fans of. Who did you like in here?
Yeah, tough race here too. I mean, I made First World War a very, very short favorite at 4-1. This is a horse that you and I talked about in advance of the Kitten's Joy, and he ended up running very well in there for Brendan Walsh, who then gave him a little bit of time off before this. Probably with an eye on keeping him a little bit shorter. And I think he fits this race like a glove. I envision him being especially tough coming from just off the pace. So he looks like a horse with a lot of upside. And I mean, you know, you're supposed to have a conversation here about musical act and really determine what you want to do with him. This is a horse, and we'll talk a little bit when we cover the Saturday races with regards to Mischief Magic, where, you know, you're going to get a lot of these Charlie Appleby horses go off a much shorter price than they should. And, you know, on paper, this horse is not particularly good. And he really doesn't fit with these horses, but he's going to get bet because of Appleby. Yep. And I think that's the kind of situation where you want to be very careful, and you don't want to extend yourself from a bankroll perspective, really trying to get to him at too short a number. I did think the pace was going to be quick in here. I actually thought Can Group made plenty of sense. Flavian Pratt riding back off the juvenile turf try two starts ago. This is a horse who I could see being pretty dangerous late with a good local effort prior. And I think you'll get, you know, roughly 8 or 10 to 1 or so on him as some of these other longer prices drift up. So I'm going to mainly use, I think, the 6 and 10, and I'll probably back up with the 12 Cugino, who has had a little bit of a rough go of it from a pace perspective. The two horses that were kind of annoying for me from a morning line perspective were Lord Bullingdon and Guy Named Joe, because they come out of a race in the Pasadena at Santa Anita that earned a pretty big speed figure. So they're going to take some money, but I'm not also going to be shocked if I end up reminding myself, be very careful with California turf form, because the public is often very critical of it. So I'm not going to be surprised if these two horses come up odds wise. I just had a very hard time making Lord Bullingdon 15 or 20 to 1 coming off an 85 buyer speed figure.
Yeah, it's impossible. This is such a tough race. Cugino, who you mentioned, was the one that I wanted to start with. as you mentioned, got caught chasing a slow pace last time. I thought ran well, all things considered, and could be seen to better effect with a mid-pack sit and a hold-up run. Doesn't have to deal with Abramar here. And this one, no workout report, but just appeared to be working well. Another horse with a less than ideal post who I thought was worth talking about was the 11 Full Nelson, winning kind, competitive figs. And again, if can sort of negotiate that post, might be able to just settle in behind the speed and use some stalk and pounce tactics like last time. I did have some respect for the 2, Guy Named Joe, and also the 8, Musical Act. I mean, you make a good point. Not world-beating form, potentially overbet if they just go nuts for Appleby, but also a horse that might be just on the improve, and based on that last run, could be on the improve. Might not have the right running style, though. We'll see. I was just going to sort of spread and hope, but I did want to definitely do some stuff on the A-line with the 12 and the 11, and then, yeah, back looking more to back up with the 2 and the 8. For you, I've got it 6-10 with the 12 as a backup here as we continue on down the line to the featured race of the day, the Grade 1 Ashland. I'm Team Impel here. I'm skeptical a little bit of Just FYI based on the figures that just aren't that fast. She may well kick sand in my face, stuff me in a locker, however you want to put it. But I thought this looked like a race where Impel was going to be very, very tough based on what we've seen from her and the overall form of the Cox Barn. Who are you with in this year's Ashland?
Yeah, it's sort of amazing how many parallels you can draw from last year's Ashland to this one, given that Impel's form looks an awful lot like Punch Bowl's. And they both came in off of this, you know, this very impressive one other than win at Oaklawn. And I think they were actually run on the exact same weekend and ended up going off favorite in the Ashland. And Punch Bowl kind of got a subpar trip and ended up finishing second, didn't get into the Kentucky Oaks, and ended up being laid off, and then turned out really to not be any good. And she was in there with Wonder Wheel, who had won the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies the prior year and came back and lost her prep. Whereas Just FYI is now coming back fresh. And, you know, the problem that you have to have with Just FYI is that, you know, this is a filly that was supposed to run on March 2nd. She got scratched. Apparently she was sick. She didn't work for 16 days, and now she's showing up with just 2 more workouts since then. So you have to wonder if there could be some fitness concerns with Just FYI, who feels like a filly who's really going to take the worst of it from a pace perspective. Because, I mean, Helena's Forte and Leslie's Rose have to show some amount of speed from inside of her. And, you know, she's going to find herself on a pretty quick chase, perhaps with Impel, you know, right on her back on the outside as well. And it looks like a really bad scenario for Just FYI. And she's probably the horse from a multi-race perspective that you're supposed to be taking a bit of a critical approach for. I went and watched a Palm Beach Downs workout on Candied, and it was terrible. She was on the wrong lead, unable to run down Julia Shining. It was a very, very poor effort. She was also on the inside, which at Palm Beach Downs is usually lightning. So she might get bet. I had a lot of people tell me what a buffoon I was for making her 6-1. I'm staying away from her. I'm not gonna touch that one. I felt like the horses that I wanted to maybe try and upset things with, the one that kind of had the most appeal to me was Shimmering Allure. I'm probably a year late on Kenny McPeak winning this race with a big price, but she felt like one that was just going to probably try and really get the best of it from a race flow perspective, sitting back and making a run. I don't know why she ran so poorly in the Busanda. I know that he gave her some time off afterwards, so maybe something was awry. He was training her with Torpedo Anna, who obviously was very impressive last week in the fantasy. So I think there's an argument at least to be made. She's going to be a big price. So I'd mainly use 5 and 7 in here. I'd probably back up with some bit of the 3 and 4.
All right. I mean, I think that's a good creative case on a price, a little bit more interesting opinion than mine in here. But glad you respect Impel, and you seem like you have the same concerns that I do about the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies. Not that the form of the race is terrible, you know, but it's not great either. It's I'm just a little suspicious, and I think that knee-jerk reaction somebody had asking you why that horse wasn't shorter, I think the public, it is possible that the public is going to have a gravitation towards that form and that, that isn't necessarily deserved. Then again, this day and age, everybody's a wise guy, and maybe the public is going to bet it exactly like you predict. It's one of the, gotta be one of the toughest things about the morning line when you've got, you know, you want to put the ability to make it a pure guess of what the public is doing versus trying to use your own institutional knowledge and smarts to shape the lines. I imagine you just try to, you know, obviously lean towards what the job is of guessing what the public's going to do. But sometimes because the public is so smart, you can't help but bring some of that extra knowledge to bear when you're making these numbers.
Yeah, that's been the hardest thing for me over time, primarily just being a horse player and being somebody that looks at races from a handicapping perspective, is taking my own inclinations, my own predilections out of the realm, because it's just, it's a great way to get yourself into trouble. And, you know, it's something, it's an idea that I've discussed with Brian Natto on numerous occasions as he makes the line down at Gulfstream, is that, you know, Brian's a horse player. He's a handicapper first and foremost. And so you have to get your own leanings out of it, because you will find yourself making horses bigger prices that you don't like, that you don't influence what the public's doing. So if the public likes them, you just end up looking foolish.
Right. One more race to talk about on this show. It's our nightcap that closes out this All Turf Pick 3 on opening day. Should have mentioned this much earlier. I'll do that on other shows, about the great takeout reduction in the doubles, bringing them as a bet all horse players should be looking at as well. Another thing we'll be focusing on in addition to the All Turf Pick 3s of these doubles all meet long at Keeneland. Here we've got 3-year-old filly maiden special weights going a mile and 3/16 on the turf. Big full field when it comes to all these various bets we've been talking about on the show at Keeneland opening day. Nick, how are we going to get paid?
Yeah, you know, the super tough race to close it out, no doubt about it. The horse that interested me the most was the 1 Moonlight Gambler for Ben Colebrook. Excuse me. Ben Colebrook has very clearly over the years done well at Keeneland. And he seems to have kind of a method for what he wants to do. And getting a race into Moonlight Gambler on the synthetic at Turfway was obviously geared towards her being ready second off the layoff. And right. I think she's going to run much better. This is a filly that he clearly held in high esteem, running her in the Jessamine last year as a maiden. She came back and nearly ran a winning race as the 9-5 favorite and got caught late. I thought her comeback race was fine. I think she has a real chance to move forward here. I like the inside post in terms of being able to save ground. I did think that there was probably less depth in here than the other race, and this is a split of the fifth, which we talked about at the top of the show. I thought Just Deny was very obvious, and Hidden Presence as well. I didn't really have big arguments against either one of them. I thought Just Deny ran well in her final start of 2023 and now comes back with Lasix for Danny Gargan. The blinkers are off, which it's funny. They didn't really seem to have any kind of real effect on her, because the first time she wore them, she sat off a really slow pace, and then she came back and sat on top of kind of a fast pace. So it might just relax her a little bit in general. Sias is a guy that wants to be forward, and I don't have any, this is all anecdotal, I don't have any hardcore data, but the spring meet at Keeneland often, speed horses early on in the meet on the turf do well. So we'll see. This will be the, you know, the third race on turf of the meet, but I could see her having maybe a bit of an edge being forwardly placed.
1, 2, and 9 for you to close things out. I did have your 1 Moonlight Gambler as a B runner in this spot. Speaking of speed horses, I thought that Guinevere had the opportunity to be a wire threat. I don't always love West Ward going this long on the turf, but just looking at it, this horse took money, didn't break, and then still ran pace figures that could be fast enough to lead these with not a lot of other speed in this race. I'm just going to take a little shot with Guinevere. And then the 4 Tonalite, one more that I'll mention, hasn't had the easiest of trips, and a trainer who points for the meet. Not the strongest win percentage, Vicky Oliver, at the meet, but a solid ROI at Keeneland on the turf. 3, 4, and 1 for me, but a race where you can go a lot of ways, as evidenced by the fact that we put together so many different ideas to close things out. All right, we're over time on this opening day show, Nick, so we're going to get this one posted. We're going to be back with coverage of Keeneland every day. For Nick Tamaro, I'm Peter Thomas Fornital. Thanks to our friends at Keeneland. Check out these low takeout daily doubles and the All Turf Pick 3. Great racing all meet long at Keeneland. May you win all your photos.